Welcome to the Disney Parks Podcast with your hosts, Tony Castelnova from DisneyByTheNumbers.com and Parkhopper John from WDWParkhoppers.com. Keep your hands, arms, feet, and legs inside the podcast at all times and get ready for the Disney Parks Podcast.
Everybody starts the day in a similar way every single morning. We open our eyes with groans and sighs while we're stretching and yawning. Then we fold aside the counterpane and the moment is at hand. Which side of the bed will our head be on? When on our feet we stand. Some days the right side is the wrong side. Some days the left side is the wrong side. Those days your face.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to the Disney Parks Podcast. We have an incredible show for you. Our guest today has done it all. She's done movies, TV, theater, and was handpicked by Richard Sherman himself to perform some of the classic Sherman Brothers songs. Our guest today is the lovely and talented Juliana Hansen. Hello, Juliana.
Hi there. How are you guys doing?
We are great. We're great. We are so happy to have you on the show.
Thank you.
You really have done it all. I mean, we were going through your bio, and there's a little bit of everything in your resume, which is very cool to see.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm trying. Just well-rounded career. That's the goal.
Yep.
I like doing it all. I don't like people telling me I can't do something, so I try to do everything and see how far I can get.
Excellent. So, I guess I always like to ask people, you know, how they got started in their careers or how they got started with Disney. So how did you get started with your entertainment career?
Yeah, I got started with my entertainment career really early on, living up in Northern California. My sister wanted to be a model. She's 10 years older than I am. And when she was 14, my mom took her to an open casting to get an agent in San Francisco. And I went with them because my mom didn't know what else to do with me. And my sister went in the room and kind of met with various agents that day. And she came out and she felt really guilty because my mom had already sent her to modeling school. Then she'd taken class. And she came out and she just kind of said, I'm so sorry, but I don't want to do this. And four-year-old me said, I want to do it. So my mom sent me in the room. And I came out that day. I was one of two kids who actually was signed by one of the top agencies in San Francisco at the time, called the Marla Dell Talent Agency. And Marla Dell herself was a former actress and model and a wonderful woman, kind of just gave me my start. And I started going out for print ads and doing giant, big poster-sized ads for like Macy's department stores. We'd walk in and just see them like hanging over our heads. And my dad was so excited. He collected them all when the ads went down. He went to the stores and like asked for them, which is hilarious. But then, you know, from that went into like commercials and doing little documentaries here and there. And eventually we decided that there wasn't enough work in San Francisco. And so my mom and I actually relocated to LA. And I did my first musical when I was 5. I played Molly and Annie. And by the time I was like 7 years old, I was consistently working in voiceovers. And you asked specifically about my start with Disney. When I was about 7 years old, I did a campaign for them. It was a radio campaign, and it was called Make Me Some Magic. And it was with Tom Bosley, who, trivia question for the listeners and also for you two. Can you guys tell me who he played in? He played a pivotal character in a Broadway show recently, a Disney Broadway show.
Hmm.
You guys have any idea?
I should know that too, because yeah. I'm a Broadway guy.
Would it help you if I said the show was Beauty and the Beast?
Oh, Richard. Is it Richard?
He's on the cast. No. Tom Bosley himself.
Oh,
he
Tom
played.
Bosley.
Yeah, he
Cogsworth.
Played Belle's father.
Right.
Belle's dad, actually, Maurice, yeah. And so it's kind of come full circle, kind of. I played Belle, and not with him, I wish. But I did this radio thing with him, and I sang a song, and did a little commercial ad and worked with him in the studio, and it was all very exciting. Just kind of went on from there. I sang on Pocahontas as a child in the studio with Alan Menken and Stephen Schwartz, and got to watch Judy Kuhn record Colors of the Wind, which was super thrilling. I've been a Disney nerd ever since.
That's very cool. Very cool.
Some of the things you said, Alan Menken and Stephen Schwartz. I mean, I'm a classically trained percussionist, so I grew up in Atlanta and I played a lot of the shows and a lot of the theaters around there. So those are names, those are heroes of mine. So it's amazing to hear your take on it. Of all the different work that you've done with voiceover and CDs and live theater, what's been your favorite thing? What's the one thing that you always love to do, probably maybe a little bit more than the other ones?
That is such a hard question for me because I love them all and they're all so different. I mean, there's nothing like performing in front of a live audience because that reaction is so immediate and you can see faces light up and, you know, the curtain call, people leap to their feet and you can hear people sniffling at emotional moments. And, you know, it's such a cool way to kind of instantly gauge how your work is affecting others, which to me is what it's all about. It's about telling stories and making people think differently about things and bringing joy. So that, you know, that's really special. But as an art form, I really enjoy being in the studio. I love everything from like singing back up on my best friend's like country album and like matching her voice and her breaths and her phrasing, to, you know, getting to create my own characters and, you know, some of the work that I've done in the studio with like Walt Disney Records and getting to bring life to songs that were written for the original Cinderella and the film Cinderella way back in the 50s. I don't even know. The 40s even. But like songs that were cut from films that never had a chance to get that life breathed into them. And it's just me and a microphone and, you know, the producer on the other side of the glass, and just kind of, I think that is such a unique and special gift to be able to do something like that. So I really enjoy that kind of work.
Yeah. And you mentioned specifically recording songs that were cut from movies, which brings me to one of my favorite projects that you were a part of. And as a fan, that's one of the reasons why I was so excited to have you on the show. As a fan of the Mary Poppins Legacy Collection, you were hand chosen by Richard Sherman to sing The Eyes of Love.
Yes, actually, I did. I sang on two songs on that album. I sang on The Eyes of Love and a song called The Right Side, which were both written by the Sherman brothers for the film with Julie in mind. But all of these songs, you know, the cut songs from a film like Mary Poppins, they were cut for various reasons, but it doesn't diminish the quality of the song itself or the writing of the song. And so it's really cool when the composer himself, you know, he's a two-time Oscar winner, and he worked with Walt and had a friendship with Walt and, you know, is still friends with Julie. And it was really kind of surreal to go into the studio and have him directing me and giving me little things here and there to think about. And ultimately having him, you know, have this big smile just across his face, listening to the final take and the take that we, you know, said, oh, we got this, that was the one, you know. Super surreal, super daunting to know that that album's out there and people are going to be comparing all the voices to Julie. but yeah, it's pretty special. Eyes of Love is such a beautiful song.
It is.
And that was one song from the film that unfortunately when Julie heard it, she said to the boys, she said, I love all of the songs except that one. She said, you know, it's a beautiful song, but it didn't to her embody Mary's spirit. She thought it was not quite right. And she said, in her exact words, she said, Mary needs to have something a little bit snappy, a little, you know, more up. And so kind of as a in answer to her critique of that song, the boys went back to the drawing table and they wrote Spoonful of Sugar, and they added the lyric, "And snap, the job's a game." And that was sort of in honor of Julie's initial listen to Eyes of Love. So one song out, another one in. We all love Spoonful of Sugar, you know. But and The Right Side is an interesting song. The Right Side is written for Mary's character to kind of show the children that attitude is the most important thing. Really, life could be wonderful. Just it all depends on how you choose to look at a situation. You know, somebody can view it and be bummed out, or somebody can view the same situation and find the joy and find the good. And, you know, and I think it's an important lesson, and the song is very much in her voice, very snappy. And so I got two very contrasting pieces for that album. I got to sing soprano-y and floaty and slow ballad, beautiful, and then I got to sing something fun and up-tempo. Yeah.
Yeah. I also was reading, you know, you've worked with Richard Sherman in the past, too. I think you also did the Spoonful of Sherman show with him.
I did. I've done that concert twice. The first time I did a Spoonful of Sherman with Richard, it's with the GSPO, Golden State Pop Orchestra, both times. And Richard actually requested me specifically for that concert. That was sort of the beginning of our friendship. I had sung at a little cabaret club in Hollywood in a Sherman Brothers show that Richard came to see. And I remember that night being so nervous that he was going to be in the audience. And I've always been one of my heroes since I was a child. And after the show, we met, and he was very complimentary and very sweet. And I got a photo with him. And about 2 months later, I was in Las Vegas for a gig. And I got a phone call, and it was from the Golden State Pops. And they said, "Hi, we're doing a concert of all Sherman Brothers music." And I said, "Great, I love the Shermans." And they said, "Well, we can't pay very much. This is what we have to offer. But we're hoping you'll say yes, because Richard actually requested you specifically. You were his one request for this show." And that kind of blew my mind. Of course, you know, I didn't care at that point if they were paying me at all. I said, "Absolutely, I'll be there." And, so that was the first time. That was about 4 years ago. And I just did the concert again this past, I think it was March. Yeah, it was probably early March.
Yeah.
I can't remember, all these dates blend together, but
yeah,
it's a fun show. And it's really neat to get, you know, shows like that allow for kids to come, and sort of kids being introduced to a symphony orchestra. It doesn't happen very often, because so much of the time orchestras are playing, you know, classical pieces and things that children don't really have the patience to sit through. But when you tell them it's going to be all the music from The Jungle Book and Mary Poppins and Charlotte's Web and, like, films that they know and they relate to, it makes a huge difference. So it's a fun concert, because it gets a lot of young people out, and we feel their energy on stage, and it's really cool.
It'd be great if they took that show on the road, but I know.
I wish they would.
Yeah, I know Richard's kind of, you know, getting up there in age, and he, you know, probably doesn't want to be bouncing all over the country. But it would be.
No, he certainly has to be careful.
Yeah, yeah.
But he still does so much, you know. Elizabeth has to remind him, I think, just how old he is at times, because if it were up to him, he'd say yes to everything, and he'd just be all over the place all of the time, and he's always asked to fly to different states, just different productions of shows that he's written, and I think it keeps them young, actually. I think it's good for them. I know Richard loves it.
Tony and I actually got to go to D23 a couple of years ago, and they did the music of Richard Sherman and Alan Menken, and they were both there.
Yes, I was there for that. I was in the front row sitting with Richard's family.
That was
a great concert.
That was an amazing concert. And my wife actually was there too. And I remember leaning over and talking to her at one point. I said, "Could you imagine being in the room with two Disney legends like that? I can't imagine what that's like." And then to hear someone say, "Yeah, Richard Sherman requested you," you know, I mean, as a Disney fan, I mean, that had to be worth its weight in gold. I mean, I can't imagine what that's like.
I mean, it really is. And I feel like as an actor and as a singer and a performer, you never stop wanting more.
Right.
Like, you're always striving for the next big thing.
Right.
But I think I can honestly say that when Richard walked into my life, although I didn't stop wanting to reach the next level and stop wanting to, you know, have bigger and better successes, I do think that my relationship with him and my friendship with him has brought so much peace and so much joy to my life and to my career that I'm just so thankful every day. It's crazy. And, you know, when I hear like a clip of something that I did in one of the concerts, or, you know, when I'm reminded of a project that I've worked on with Richard, it still doesn't seem real, you know, because there are so many talented people out there. And like, the fact that he sees something in me that makes him want to continue to work with me it's mind blowing. And it's such an honor. And I don't think I'll ever get over that aspect of it, you know, because the fan in me always shows up to these events going, oh my gosh, I hope he likes me, you know, I hope I make him proud. And I think at this point, you know, we're close, we're like family. So I feel like he'll be proud of me no matter what I do, as a parent would be proud of a child. But the artist in me still goes, oh my gosh, this is Richard freaking Sherman. Like, I have to be good. I have to do this. I can't let him down. You know, it's so terrifying.
I totally understand that.
Yeah, but it's awesome. It's such a gift.
I'm
so grateful. Yeah.
That's cool. I would like to shift gears a little bit and talk about another project that you worked on that is kind of near and dear to my heart, which is The Lost Chords. And you worked on, you did some songs for The Lost Chords, Cinderella, and also the Peter Pan. Tell us a little bit about those projects, because those are two really unique projects that I think a lot of Disney fans, they really need to be more aware of, in my opinion. I mean, the group that Tony and I kind of run with, we're the guys that have them loaded into our iPods, and, you know, we're hip to it. But I think, you know, John Q Disney fan probably needs to be more aware of these. Could you tell us a little bit about those projects and what it was like working on them?
So The Lost Chords was, and you'll probably know more about this than I do, but it was a book. Is that correct? Do you know about this?
Yeah, I think they were books, and I think there was a CD version of them too. I think I've seen it on Amazon. But they're a little dated, I think, now. They're probably a couple of years old.
And it only included like lyrics from songs that never made it, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it was all the stuff that was cut from Cinderella or Peter Pan or whatever.
You found them like archives years later, but somebody like published a book or a series of books called The Lost Chords.
Yep.
Okay, so taking that idea, I guess, Randy Thornton, who's the producer that I've worked with over at Walt Disney Records, and he's a genius. Randy decided that it would be great if they could do fully orchestrated, beautiful versions of these songs, these lost chords, and get them out there. They're being sold in the parks. They're being sold on Amazon. They're on iTunes. But he wanted them to be heard as they were intended to be in the films, because he recognized that they were great and that, you know, oftentimes they're cut because there's, you know, a shortage of time or a character is written out or that, you know, they'd be cut for so many reasons. So what Randy's doing, and I was involved in the very first, the initial demo, which was the pitch to the corporation to say, hey, can we please do this as a project? So, and on the original demo, I sing The Eyes of Love, and I sang the North Pole Polka, which is also on the Mary Poppins Legacy album. But I think it was a 3 or 4 song demo, which pitched the idea to the higher up at Disney, which then gave Randy the go-ahead to do these CDs. So they're fabulous. They've done the Aristocats. They've done the two that I've sung on, Cinderella and Peter Pan. They did Sleeping Beauty. They plan to do all of them. And what they do is they get the best just the best musicians that they can find in LA. A lot of Hollywood Bowl orchestra musicians come into the studio. And they play these exquisite versions of these songs. And then they send the tracks out to the singers. And we have about a 3-day period with them before we walk into the studio and put the vocals down. And it's a very exciting project. And what they do on the album specifically is they'll have the original demo from the time that they were working in the studio on the film originally, you know, in like the 50s, 60s, with either the composer singing the track or maybe, you know, the woman playing Cinderella, she'll sing a track here and there. And then, and sometimes they have to piece them together. There's one on Cinderella that actually, the only remaining copy that they had, the only archival copy that they could find, was broken, and they had to re-piece together the tapes to kind of make a fluid track to include on the album as the demo. So it's very cool. And then they'll do a modernized version with modern-day singers and full orchestrations, and yeah, just kind of show you what those songs could have been. And they're just so much fun.
I love the process of, well, here's the demo. Here's kind of the way that it sounded back then. And then the next track is this incredibly lush orchestration, you know, incredibly well, you know, put together with the vocalist and the lead. And it's just such a great project. And it really is a piece of Disney history that sort of existed, but it really has come to its own life. You know, it's kind of got this own life. And it was just so awesome to hear you sing the songs that you were on and to hear the orchestrations. It's just a great project.
And,
you know, it's just, you know, as a fan, I'm just so grateful to all the work that you and you know, all the producers and the people who put it together did. It's just, it's so amazing. It's such a great thing to actually now own.
Oh, wonderful. I'm so glad that you love them. Cinderella, I love the songs that I got to do on that album, especially because it sits a little lower for me in my register, and so I don't often get the chance to sing down there, and so for me that was really fun. But I've got to tell you guys a fun story about recording the one for Peter Pan. That song Neverland that I sing is written by Richard. I don't know if you guys knew that.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess the story to that is they had found lyrics. Like unfinished lyrics in the Peter Pan archive, and they'd come to Richard years ago and said, hey, could you turn this into a song? And he said, yeah, I think so. And he did, and it's beautiful. And then the song kind of never did anything. Kate O'Hara, there's a little snippet of her on the extras, like DVD features on the Peter Pan, like anniversary edition of Paige singing it. But it never was really released as a song or, you know, as part of an album. And I got asked to do that song, came into the studio, heard the track, and it was way faster. It was very up-tempo and exciting and driven. And Richard had not yet heard the track, and he heard it for the first time while I was standing next to him in the studio. And he just kind of got really quiet and didn't say anything. And at the end of it, he goes, that's not the song I wrote. Like, I wrote a ballad, I wrote something heartfelt and like almost like a lullaby, and this version is beautiful, but it's been turned into a jaunty little ditty, and he goes, she can't record it like this. And we were all standing there going, oh no, you know, it was completely orchestrated and finished, and we had a film crew there documenting everything, and we were going to have to send them home, and it was this moment of panic. And then Richard looked at me and he said, Juliana, he goes, come in here with me, and he grabbed my hand, brought me into the studio, and sat down at the piano, and he said, this is how I want you to sing it. And he played, and he sang, and, you know, it was a different version. It was a slowed-down arrangement, and like he said, you know, very much of a lullaby. And he goes, can you do that? And I was like, yeah, of course. And so he goes, I'll play for her and still sing. And Randy Thornton, the producer, said, well, why don't you, Richard, record a clean track first. We'll get you playing it, and then we have that, and then we'll bring Juliana in, and she can sing to that track. because that way it's easier for them if they need to slice anything on either of our ends and, you know, fix things. And Richard said, no, we do this all the time. We're going to do this together. So he set up my microphone facing him at the piano. And we did that song in about 6 takes from start to finish. You know, little things here or there that we'd flub on, and we'd just start from the beginning again and go straight through. And on the final take, the one that they ended up using, I just remember the song ended, and Richard looked at me and said, I think we have it. And then he turned to the, he looked through the glass and he said, Randy, are you happy? And Randy said, yes, I'm very happy. Come on in here. And so we walked on in and he played it back, and that was the take. And they were able to salvage harp parts from the original track that they had done. That was the only instrument that they were able to keep. And they, you'll hear the harp in the version of, you know, the song that ended up on the album. But that was so special. I mean, that couldn't have turned out better, really. Because now I've gone from, you know, singing for Richard to actually working with Richard, you know, one-on-one on this song and kind of creating this beautiful thing together. So that was like, that was a really special, it turned out to be for the best, you know?
Yeah. Those those songs are on Amazon, and we're going to link to them because I think people need to buy them. The albums are not expensive either. They're really relatively cheap. They're like $7. And what I can see is they got Peter Pan, The Aristocrats, Cinderella, and The Rescuer. So, and your song was Neverland that you had done with Richard. Was that the
title?
Right. Yeah. So, I think everybody will enjoy listening to those, and they should go out and buy them. But it was very cool.
I think so too. Yeah.
Now I remember when we met you at the Disneyland Fan Club in December. You were doing Aladdin, the musical spectacular, and you were playing Princess Jasmine at the time?
That is right. I do that show 3 days a week at California Adventure. I started the show 3 years ago, and I came in as a full-time Jasmine, so I was there 4 times a week, 4 shows a day. And they renewed me twice as a full-time Jasmine, and this time I just kind of said, I think I needed an extra day in my life to kind of pursue TV stuff and voiceover stuff and, you know, just to have a little bit more downtime. So, and there are Sundays, Mondays, and Wednesdays, and I love it. It's a great day job, and it's a beautiful show. I mean, it's been running for about 12 years, and the audiences are still full every show. And the fans are very dedicated and supportive, and there's been talk about replacing it over the past 10 years, and I think people have just thrown such fits because it is such a spectacular show that nobody wants it to leave. So that's been kind of cool.
Yeah, I saw some video of it, and you were spectacular in that.
I think,
could do the Broadway version of Aladdin very easily.
Mm. Well, thank you. I would love that opportunity one day.
Have you ever had a chance to see the Broadway version of that?
I have not yet seen it. I would love to. One of my best friends, her name is Ariel Jacobs, and her brother plays Aladdin, Adam Jacobs. And I see little clips here and there on television shows and stuff, but I haven't actually been able to make it out there to see the show. But one day, hopefully it'll run for a very long time, and maybe I'll find myself coming in as Jasmine at some point. I'm a very big fan of Disney musicals on Broadway. I think that they're really magical and really fun and sort of good old-fashioned, you know, traditional musical theater entertainment, which nowadays musical theater in the Broadway community has kind of taken a much more contemporary turn. And, you know, it's great. They're producing some fabulous things. And people like Lin-Manuel Miranda, who wrote In the Heights, has just written a show called Hamilton. And that show is, you know, sort of like a rap kind of rap/pop musical theater kind of show. And it's fabulous. But I think that when you go to a Disney musical, it kind of brings you back to those old days of musical theater, like giant production numbers and, you know, things that Broadway is missing a little bit of these days, and things that I certainly miss being an actor auditioning for them. So I love Disney shows on Broadway. I would love to do one someday. I played Belle in Beauty and the Beast, but I did that regionally upstate. It was actually a good segue into Mary Poppins.
Right.
I just finished playing Mary Poppins out in Thousand Oaks with Cabrillo Musical Theater, directed by Lewis Wilkenfeld, who is hands down the best director I've ever worked with. And I've worked with bigger names and I've worked with flashier people, but he is brilliant as far as I'm concerned. And he brought so much heart to an already beautiful show. And Richard and Elizabeth came opening night and gifted me a parrot umbrella, which is very cool. I named him Herbert. And now he lives in my room, kind of next to my bed. But that show is, that's a special show. And if you've never seen it and you get the opportunity to, spectacular.
Yeah, it is. It truly is a spectacular show. I got to see the touring company, the Broadway touring company, when they came to town. And it was amazing. The deal where he walks upside down in this production, they did the full walking upside down. And
he did that in ours as well. It's very cool.
Yeah, it's really amazing. And my favorite part of it was at the end to see all the little kids clamoring for a copy of the CD and clamoring for a copy or their own umbrella. Yeah. And I just thought that was really neat. And my favorite memory was we were walking into the theater because we have the Straz Theater here in Tampa, which is where I'm from. And it's this gorgeous theater. And there were all these little, you know, 7, 8, you know, little Mary Poppins running around. And it was so adorable. So adorable. And then we actually wound up, we didn't know it at the time, we had a friend in the cast. And we wound up going backstage, which if you've never done a theater show, that, you know, the actors have to come out at some point. Nice. And so we went backstage and bumped into them and talked to them. And then all these kids were coming around and they were just so fascinated by the actors. And, you know, when the Mary Poppins performer came out, they just lost their minds. It was so good. So, you know, you were talking about, you know, kids with symphonies. I agree. And I think live theater is an art form that more young people need to be introduced to. And I could tell you, at least on that day, there was a lot of kids who were inspired to be on the stage. So
absolutely.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Yes, that's very neat. We had a little group of Girl Scouts who came to one of our matinees. And I met with them afterwards, did a special little meet and greet with them. And they were all wearing Mary Poppins hats. So they all had, like, dresses on and different, you know, they looked like they were going to a birthday party or something. They were all dolled up, but then they all had these little matching Mary Poppins hats, and I just thought that was the cutest thing.
Tell us a little bit about the Land Before Time. You were in the Land Before Time 4.
I did. Yes, it was the fourth one. It was called Journey Through the Mist. Gosh, I was a kid. But I'm the lead dinosaur. It's me and Littlefoot. It's our adventure. And, I'm a long-necked dinosaur, just like Littlefoot, for any of you fans of that film. And I get to sing on the soundtrack. I sing a song called It Takes All Sorts. And I sound like a drunken chipmunk with a cold. my little child voice is insanely hilarious. You must YouTube that song to hear what I mean, because you will agree with me. It's ridiculous sounding. But I had so much fun doing that film. I remember for my audition, they wanted everybody to come in with a song, and then they gave us a scene. And so the scene was from the movie, and the song was your own choice. And I think I walked in and sang something like, You Made Me Love You, which is an old Judy Garland song. And I remember sitting in the lobby and hearing, like, the three girls in front of me sing Over the Rainbow. So I was really glad that I chose a different one. I was on the Universal lot recording that, and it was like a regular work day. It was like we'd start at like 10 a.m. and we'd have a lunch break, and at lunch we'd go across the street to this little place that had like pool tables. And I remember I had a huge crush on the Littlefoot. He was like 3 years older than me, and I thought he was just so cool. And he had done films 2 through 4, so he was like a veteran, and yeah, he probably didn't think of me in the same way. I was a baby. But I just remember having a blast. And it's really cool. I still got notes that will arrive to my agency, or sometimes my little email address on my website. I'll get a message from somebody in some part of the world saying that they love that movie and asking me what it was like to play Allie. And I think that's really cool. I think it's really neat that that's a film that people still think about. I remember when I was doing The Wizard of Oz about 10 years ago, I was playing Dorothy, and there was a kid who came to the stage door and with their mom, and their mom said, she just loves Going Before Time movies. Could you sing her a piece of that song? And so I did, and I didn't have the same little voice, but she just got, like, so wide-eyed and, like, couldn't believe. I guess I sounded similar enough. it rang a bell in her little brain, and she just got completely jaw on the floor and kind of awestruck by the whole thing. And it's so funny because it's not even the first one. It's not the one that was in the movie theaters, but I certainly had a great time doing it.
Yep.
So I'm glad that people like watching it.
I'm probably dating myself, but my kids used to watch those movies all the time, The Land Before Time.
Yeah. Totally. They're exciting.
I know.
They're good movies. The woman who wrote them, I didn't want to audition for it because the first one was so sad. And I remember, like, not liking the first one and not even being able to, like, get through it, because once they kill off Littlefoot's mom, I think it is, I just remembered being, like, devastated. And so when I started working on the film, the woman told us all a story that, like, she started getting hate mail, and the kids in her neighborhood would, like, ding-dong ditch her, and, like, so she had to promise everyone that she wouldn't make any of the sequels as sad as the first one. And she kept that promise. I don't know if any of the good dinosaurs end up dying in the sequels, but in number four, Littlefoot's grandfather is sick, but they save him. So...
That's a good promise to keep to the kids. We won't kill off any more dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Certainly not like Jurassic World, where they killed off everything.
Oh, I just saw that yesterday, and I loved it.
Yeah, right?
On the edge of my seat the whole movie. It's crazy.
Yeah. Now, I was also reading that you did some voiceover work for Pocahontas.
Yeah, you know, I sang in the studio with a group of people. They're called loop groups. And it was like just a studio session with Alan Menken and Stephen Schwartz. Again, I was a child. And there was this big, like, wedding song and number, I guess, for Pocahontas that never ended up in the movie. And I just remember I had this one little line that they had given to me that would have been, like, my big solo in the film. I wish it was in the movie because I'd probably be getting some nice residuals. But I had this one line that went, the song, one of the, I guess, the group of adults sang Pocahontas, see your cape, and a little, like, 9-year-old me sang How It Sparkles, and then they sang, yes, it does, she will be a lovely bride, that's the way her mother was. And it was like this one little tiny moment that I got to sing. But then I sang as part of the larger group. And that same day, and Stephen Schwartz was in the studio with us and directing us, giving us notes. And he was wearing cowboy boots and a giant cowboy hat. And he signed my music for me at the end of the session. And I just remember before we left, we heard Judy Kuhn in the studio, and she was recording Colors of the Wind. And so I kind of got to sit outside the studio door and, like, kind of peer in through the window and hear her record that song before we left. And that was, like, just a dream for me. It was very exciting.
Wow.
I've always wanted to do the voice of a Disney princess in an animated feature, and I hope that someday I'll get to. But that was very surreal. And I've gotten to sing for Alan Menken and Stephen Schwartz one time since. And that was at a show in Glendale at a theater called the Alex Theater, big, beautiful, historic theater. And it was a benefit. And I got to premiere the song, A Happy Working Song, before the the film Enchanted was released.
Wow.
So I was the very first person to ever sing that song live.
Wow.
And and we had to get like special approval from like Stephen and Alan's people. And they had said that there was a chance that they wouldn't be releasing the song for us. So up until about 3 days before the concert, I was living in New York at the time, and the show was out in Los Angeles. But I remember being on the phone with the director, and he was like, well, you may be singing Part of Your World, but you may be singing something new. I'm waiting to hear back. And I was like, okay, when are they going to let us know? Because I'm going to have to learn something new. And about 3 days before the show, he said, okay, we got the go-ahead. You're singing this song from the film Enchanted, and nobody's ever heard it. And good luck, because it's got tons of words, and you've got a couple days to learn it. And by the way, Stephen and Alan will be there. And I was like, oh my God. But yeah, apparently their people had to like, our director like sent them clips of me performing, and they had to approve me to sing the song. And it was very exciting to be the first. And, you know, because the song wasn't a known entity yet, I felt that added responsibility to make all the jokes land, because I read the lyrics and I heard the music and I went, okay, so this is supposed to be funny. They're talking about, you know, vermin and mice and things helping her clean. And, you know, it's like, so how, but it's so fast. And like, I didn't even know if I'd walk on stage and like, if the audience would even, you know, if it would land at all. I just didn't know. And sure enough, I walked out there and luckily remembered all of the words and got some laughs during the song, and I was like, oh, good, they're with me, they're here, this is great. And, so that's sort of become a song that I sing a lot now. I love that song, and it's on my album. I've got a CD from a cabaret that I did in Hollywood, and I sing that in my cabaret. And, Stephen and Alan are great. I mean, I'm obsessed with Alan Menken. He is my childhood hero. Mm-hmm. Even more so than Richard, I think, because Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin, those were the films that kind of shaped,
right,
you know, my whole career, I think. I think I learned to sing from listening to Jody Benson.
Right.
So to be a part of a show that he, you know, of all of his music, that for him was amazing.
What's so fascinating to listen to your story is the word that comes to mind about the guys that you run with is prolific. Sherman Brothers, Alan Menken, you know, mm-hmm. Steven Schwartz. I mean, these are names that I revere. And to hear you say, oh yeah, Steven and Alan, we're good friends. You know, I'm just hanging out with Richard the other day. We're kicking back. Oh. We're besties. And that's fascinating, you know, but the one question that I did want to ask that has nothing to do with the Disney property specifically, that I'm sure you're very excited about, is the CD that you have, Juliana Hansen, yes, live at Sterling's upstairs at the Federal.
Yes.
That's a great CD.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It was really exciting for me. That was the first solo cabaret show that I ever did. And the director, who I was just referencing for my story about Happy Working Song, his name's Bruce Kimmel, and he's amazing. And he directed that show for me. And we wrote it together, and it's sort of an introduction into who I am, and sort of my introduction into the cabaret scene. We wanted to just be like, this is who I am, here I am, I love this, let's go, let's have some fun. So it's not really... There's not a script beyond that. There's not a storyline. But I tell a lot of cool stories and do some really neat arrangements of songs that you've probably heard a million times. Things like I Can't Say No from Oklahoma. We slowed it down and made it really sexy and really jazzy, and it's really fun. I do an entire Sherman Brothers medley. And actually, Richard and Elizabeth were at that performance, and that CD is recorded live at the show. So Richard and Elizabeth were there. They're part of the crowd reactions. I speak directly to them at one point during the show. But I do some of his early stuff, his Annette Funicello stuff, and and sing, gosh, Monkey's Uncle, Let's Get Together, On the Front Porch with You from Summer Magic, which is an obscure but wonderful Disney film. It's always been one of my favorites. And then Feed the Birds. And yeah, and the CD, I think, has a really great variety, even just in standards like Smile and Moon River. And I end the whole album, my encore is Over the Rainbow. And yeah, it's a really, for me, that was a labor of love. And it was a show that I've performed about 5 or 6 times since, kind of in various places around California. And I might be taking it to England at some point next year. I'm in talks for that. But it's a really fun album. And yeah, if you get tired of hearing me talk, you can just press next and it goes straight to the next song. A little insider information. You don't have to listen to my stories if you don't
I love it. I love yeah. I love your version of Feed the Birds. That's my favorite Thank Sherman you. Brothers song. And your version is pretty too. Amazing. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
So where can Special people song. Get where can people get that CD? Is that available on Amazon, or is that just that is there a special CD, place?
I believe it's available on Amazon, and it's also available through Clitzerland Records is the label that produced it, and you can get it through either my website, which is juliannahanson.com, or you can get it through Bruce Kimmel's website, which I believe is Clitzerland.com.
Right.
Yep, it might yep. be Haynes his way. Is it Clitzerland.com?
It's Clitzerland.com, and we'll link that up great. In the show notes below.
Oh,
so.
Thank you. Yeah, it's not yet up on iTunes, but I'm hoping that we can get it up there at some point.
Okay, just to make you laugh, Juliana, your CD is on Amazon, and somebody is selling it for $111.11.
Wow. Is it autographed?
I don't know what it is, but...
Did Richard sell it?
I don't know. That's pretty crazy.
That's hilarious. I wonder if I'm related to this person.
I don't know. It's only one copy. It's used, and it's $111, so...
Oh my gosh, that is so funny.
You may want to check your royalty check this month.
Yes. Oh, that is so funny. Wow. Yeah. While we're shamelessly plugging social media and albums and things, I'd love to just say I have Twitter and I have Instagram, and I always post when I'm coming to somebody's, you know, to any new town, any new city. I travel around the world with a concert called Disney in Concert. And it's Disney music with symphony orchestras. And we've got 2 different shows. We've got one called Magical Music from the Movies, which is a lot of the Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast era stuff, as well as Lion King and Poppins, a whole Poppins medley and Jungle Book. And then there's a new show called Tale as Old as Time, which has a little bit of those shows that I've already mentioned, but also much of the new stuff, Tangled, Frozen, Hercules. It's a fabulous, fabulous show. And I travel all around the world with that. And so if you guys ever want to see it, you've got to keep an eye out for when we're going to be in your hometown. I always post on my Twitter, which is at Juliana Hanson, and on my Instagram at Juliana Hanson. And so they're good places to kind of check into, because I'm traveling at least once a month these days and going all over the world, other countries and all around the U.S. And so it's a good thing to keep an eye out for. And for you guys specifically, if we ever come to your hometown, shoot me an email and I can get you guys comps, because I get to see you in every city.
That sounds great, because I've already seen you live at the Disney Anna Fan Club, and it was awesome. And I would certainly love to see more. You know, we have to thank you. You know, for coming on and talking to us and telling us these awesome stories. You know, like John said, you know, working with, you know, people like Richard Sherman and Alan Menken, they're all people that, you know, we all know and love, because, I mean, the Shermans, I believe, have written the songbook to most of our lives.
Yes.
So, you know, to hear stories and performances such as yourself is really a great thing. So we appreciate
you,
carrying on the legacy.
Well, I appreciate you guys still being interested in it and seeing just how valuable this stuff is. Because for me, it is so important to keep this music alive. And I'm thrilled and I'm so grateful to have been on your show. So thank you for having me.
Well, thank you. And we just want to say we'll see you in the parks.
The Disney Parks Podcast is not affiliated with the Walt Disney Company. All Disney parks, attractions, lands, shows, event names, etc. are registered trademarks of the Walt Disney Company.
Like a boat out of the blue, fate steps in and sees you through.